Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 25, The Glories of Devotional Service, text 14. Tamimam te pravakshami, yamavucham puranage, rishinam shrotukamanam, Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Tamimam te pravakshami. Yamavocham puranake. Rishinam shrotukamanam. Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Tangimang te pravakshami. Yamivocham puranage. Rishinam shrotukamanam. Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Tamimam. That very. Te. To you. Pravakshami, I shall explain. Yam, which, avocham, I explain. Pura, formerly. Anage, O pious mother. Rishinam, to the sages. Shrotukamanam, eager to hear. Yogam, yoga system. Sarvanga, in all respects. Naipunam, serviceable and practical. Translation. O most pious mother, I shall now explain to you the ancient yoga system which I explained formerly to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. Purport. The Lord does not manufacture a new system of yoga. Sometimes it is claimed that someone has become an incarnation of God and is expounding a new theological aspect of the Absolute Truth. But here we find that although Kapila Muni is the Lord himself and is capable of manufacturing a new doctrine for his mother, he nevertheless says, I shall just explain the ancient system, which I once explained to the great sages, because they were also anxious to hear about it. When we have a super excellent process already present in Vedic scriptures, there's no need to concoct a new system to mislead the innocent public. At present, it has become a fashion to reject the standard system and present something bogus in the name of a newly invented process of yoga. Om Ajnanachimirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gobhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Lord Kapiladev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is responding to a request by his mother. The mother understands that her son is not an ordinary person. In fact, indeed, he is Bhagavan. She's taking shelter of her son for both material reasons and spiritual reasons. The material reasons are Varnashram Dharma, the systematic Vedic way how civilized life should progress. That means at a certain age, the father leaves home to fully immerse himself in spiritual realization, and the mother is left under the care of the oldest son. So that was the material reason for Devahuti to take shelter of her son, Sri Kapila Dev. Varnashram Dharma is a material system, but it's Krishna's system. It has nothing to do with the spirit soul. It's all about the body and the body's propensities and inclinations. But it's Krishna's system for dealing with the purification of the conditioned souls, who are indeed, by definition, bound by conditions. So Varnashram Dharma takes those bound conditions and utilizes them in such a way that purification can be achieved, and gradually the conditioned soul can be secure on the spiritual platform. So again, it's a material system, but it is Krishna's system for how to best make progress in the material world towards spiritual advancement. Of course, now everything is topsy-turvy, and you see the result. Everyone knows so much better than Krishna how to organize society. So you have economic, political, and environmental confusion. If we know so much, if we are so civilized, why cannot we devise a society in which people are secure and peaceful and stress-free? Why is it that in spite of increasing technological advancements, people are becoming more and more stressed out and having more and more breakdowns? What is happening? Some or other, we've missed the point. So Krishna's system, Varnashram Dharma, is meant to provide a material framework for the gradual redevelopment of the living entity's spiritual propensities. In India, of course, due to the effect of the age of Kali, the Varnashram system degraded into casteism, which everyone hates unless you're from the top caste. Then you like it. Otherwise, everyone else says, throw this system out. It's all about monopoly. It's all about domination. Mm-hmm. So it is highly unfortunate that the misunderstanding of Krishna's system became so prevalent. As you know, Krishna says clearly in Bhagavad Gita, guna karma vibhagasha. The caste systems are determined by quality and activity. Krishna never says by birth. But deviating from what Krishna says, havoc has spread. So now in India, so many think Varnashram Dharma means caste system by birth. And in the West, people think, who wants this Varnashram Dharma system? We're all equal. One person, one vote. They're deluded in that way. They don't see the enormous inequalities in terms of economics and politics. But they are feasting on dogma. They're feasting on blind faith. We're all equal. Meanwhile, 24/7, they're experiencing inequalities. So they have this religious belief. Everyone is equal. As they say in the USA, any person can become president. Yes, as long as you have $1 billion to fund your campaign. Any person can become president. You have to pay for all the media advertising and television segments and so on and so forth. An internet campaign, so important these days. So, Where is that equality? So in the West, they don't like when they hear about Varnashram Dharma, because they think, no, we are all equal. Everyone has a chance. And in India, they don't like to hear about the real Varnashram Dharma system, because that ruins the monopoly of the caste system. Srila Prabhupada had trouble because of that. Person's angry. You are destroying the Hindu religion. What is the Hindu religion? Real religion means to do what Krishna wants. But people became offended by saying that any qualified person can become a brahmana. All of Dharma will be spoiled. In other words, our family monopoly will be broken. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master. Also, same problems. In fact, when he would take parikrama, groups of thousands around Vrindavan, sometimes people would throw stones. Yes, once even Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had to disguise himself to escape. One disciple saw the danger of the attacking mob, and he said, look, you put on my clothes. He's wearing white, he's a householder. You put on my clothes, I'll put on your clothes, and that way we'll just divert the crowd, so you'll be safe, Guru Maharaj. Why was the crowd so angry? Oh, this Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is giving Brahmin initiation to those not born in Brahmana families. So this madness has caused so much havoc. So in India, you have the problem of this guaranteed body monopoly. And in the West, you just have a different version of the problem. So-called guaranteed equality. Right? No matter where you come from, once you get your PR in Australia, then you're equal. Right? In your mind, as soon as you get the PR, then you have equal economic and political chances. This is the delusion that everyone feasts on. Meanwhile, what are the statistics? 1% of all the people in the world control 50% of the wealth. But you're all equal. You're all equal to watch television and get absorbed in social media 24/7 and think you're equal. Meanwhile, someone else runs off with all the money and all the political power. But you're equal. Krishna's system is perfect. It's coming from Krishna. And even though it's a material system, the whole material world comes from Krishna also. So Krishna is the expert on how to live best within his material energy. Because Janmadiya Sittaha, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. Everything means also the perfect knowledge how to live within the material world and return to the spiritual world. This perfect knowledge is what Devahuti is requesting. In other words, she's saying, I am not going to treat you as my son anymore. I'm going to sit before you in the lower position, and you're on the asana, and I want to receive transcendental instruction. It's a very great turning point. Just as in Bhagavad Gita, when Arjuna more or less told Krishna, friendly talks are over. Now, shishyashteham sharimam tvam prapanya. I'm your disciple. I'm a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. At that point, Bhagavad Gita turns. Friendly talks are over. Krishna takes the role of the teacher, giving the supreme wisdom. So similarly, Devahuti here has made her presentation to her son. Many of you have seen that picture, the painting of Devahuti on the cover of the Bhagavatam. You've seen it? Sitting on the floor before her son on the asana. How many mothers here would do that to their son? Once I went home to visit my mother, and she doesn't know anything about Krishna consciousness, but she once picked up a Bhagavad Gita and a Bhagavatam volume and was looking through it. Let me see what my son has been into for all these decades. And then she must have seen something that attracted her. So anyway, the next time I visited, she took me in the living room and she put me on the couch and then she sat on the floor before me and said, "Is this how you do it?" Anyway, that was just one time. So what is Devahuti's presentation to Kapila Dev? We can learn so much from that. I also have to remember, be careful what I say about my mother because she sometimes listens to these recordings. Right? Anyway. So what is Devahuti's presentation that we're going to learn from? She says to Lord Kapiladeva, "I'm sick of the disturbance of my material senses." That first qualification has to be there if we want to advance in spiritual life. We have to feel the inconvenience of living in the material world. If you don't feel that, it means your human life has not begun. You have to feel that inconvenience. You have to feel the disconnect, the dissonance, the inevitable commotions. You have to feel that. And Devahuti is presenting herself in that way. My material senses are causing such problems. Because of these material senses, I've descended into the pit of ignorance. And then she makes her appeal to Lord Kapiladeva, saying, because she's already expressed her own situation about being disturbed by Maya and she's sick of it. But now she's going to describe Lord Kapiladeva's situation. "You are my transcendental eye obtained after many births in this world. Through you I can see what is matter, what is spirit, what is the ultimate goal of life. You are my transcendental eye." She's demonstrating the qualities of a genuine disciple. Even though she's talking to what appears to be her son, she knows this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who apparently took birth from me, just like what? The sun apparently takes birth from the eastern horizon. Or the moon seems to take birth from the ocean. Similarly, my son appears to be my son. He appears to have taken birth from me. But actually, he's my transcendental I. Not only is he my transcendental I, but he's the axe to chop the tree of material existence. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? "Ashvattam enam suviruddha mulam." With determination, you must cut down the tree of material existence. So Devahuti is recognizing Kapiladeva is that axe that can end my complicated, intricate material existence. So she wants to know, how do I get out of the material world? How do I become attached to Krishna? What is Lord Kapiladeva's response? He recognizes that his mother's desire for enlightenment is uncontaminated. What does that mean? It means there is no material motivation. What does the second verse of Bhagavatam, first canto, say? Dharma projita kaitavocha paramo namatsaranam satam. From the very beginning, the Bhagavatam makes it clear. This is a shastra, an encyclopedic spiritual work, which allows no entrance of material motivation. Projita is swept out, rejected, just like with a broom, you sweep something out of the room. All all desires other than how to please Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. All other desires are barred from Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, Paramo Namatsaranam Satam, it is the Shastra for those who are swan-like and those who want to become swan-like. Paramahansa, free from material influence. Those who are that way or who want to be that way. And therefore, they have no envy. Especially they are not envies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that kind of envy is the root cause of our being in the material world. Srimad Bhagavatam presents itself as actually being of benefit to the conditioned soul because it uproots the tree of material existence. It doesn't just trim the branches. It doesn't just pick off a few leaves here and there on the tree. It uproots the whole tree. So from the very beginning of Bhagavatam, it is making the point that any real solution to your problems and society's problems has to be capable of uprooting the entire tree of material existence. Now, what do you say about that? Oh, that's too ambitious. Right? We don't want to pull up the whole tree. We just want to prune some branches, you know, trim some branches, that's all. It's not that we want to deny the whole tree. That tree has some fruits that taste sweet at first, even though later it's poison. But now we are in the West, you know, and there you just go for the moment. Think that right now the taste is sweet, and you don't worry about the future poison. That's advancement in the West. In traditional India, they worry too much. Oh, this is happiness now, but it can turn to distress. But in the West, you feel free. No worries, mate. It's happiness now. Why worry about the future? If your future is going to be progressive, you have to uproot the entire tree of material existence. That should be your goal. Make gradual progress toward that. If there's some kind of political, economic, or even religious program that is not capable of uprooting the entire tree of material existence, it is known, according to the standard of Srimad Bhagavatam, as Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. You call it religion, but it can't do the job. It can't totally finish material existence. And number two, it cannot bring about pure love of God, devoid of any material motivation. Even those dedicated to the impersonal Brahman, they haven't solved completely the problem of material existence because they still have desires and individuality. No matter how much they think they've merged into Brahman, they have to fall back down to material existence. Because they don't know anything about what's up, they have to go down to deal with their repressed individuality and repressed desires. So, even seeking to merge into the impersonal Brahman is not a solution to the problems of material existence. It's just a temporary relief. But Bhagavatam wants to solve all the problems. Economic, political, ecological, everything. You have never read such an ambitious, extraordinary text as Srimad Bhagavatam. It takes everything into consideration. Leaves no stone unturned. And gives you the complete program for making the full solution to the problems of material existence. Lord Kapiladeva heard that his mother's desire was free from any material motivations. She had no desire for Kaitava Dharma, cheating religion. She didn't want to hear about how her karma could be better. She didn't want to hear about how she could attain the heavenly planets in her next birth. She didn't want to hear about mystic powers, yoga cities. She didn't want to hear about merging into the impersonal Brahman. She wants the complete solution. How to please Krishna 100%. What was Lord Kapilde's response after detecting his mother's pure desire? He knew this is the best circumstance for delivering transcendental knowledge. His mother is actually hearing. And that brings us to a very important point. What does submissive hearing mean? I often explain, and you may think submissive hearing means to sit down and listen, and you do with your palms folded, and that's nice. But no, more than that, submissive hearing means you hear with the attitude that I'm going to apply in my life what I hear. That is submissive hearing. It's not just a physical posture. Although physical postures of submissiveness do help. But meanwhile, where is the mind? Because you know how it's very easy. Yes, Prabhu, it is all your mercy, whatever you say. But in your mind, you're thinking, I'm not going to do that. Right? Everyone knows, right? Jai Gurudev, everything is just your mercy. Oh, I don't want to do that. That's too much. Submissive hearing means you're hearing with the attitude, I want to apply what I'm hearing. I plan to apply what I'm hearing. So Lord Kapiladev noticed his mother had that real submissiveness. So within himself, he thanks her for her questions. Bhagavatam is not only the answers that are perfect, but also the questions that are perfect. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, as I often explain, the questions are just as important as the answers. So where have you seen such a book so immense in which every question is just as important as the answer? That's why Shukadeva Goswami is always congratulating Prajit Maharaj for asking questions about Krishna, because those questions lead to ecstasy. And Prajit Maharaj congratulates Shukadeva Goswami for giving the perfect answers. Bhagavatam is actually all about ecstasy. But we don't know what is ecstasy in the material world. What are we attached to? Material happiness. But right in the beginning, the Bhagavatam says, sorry, this is not a book about material happiness. So then we become afraid. Uh-oh, what have I gotten into? I want dharma for material benefit. I want to be materially happy. I want to be materially prosperous. But the Bhagavatam sweeps out all concerns for material happiness and distress. What is this? But then you have to understand the problems with material happiness. As those who were here for class yesterday might remember, material happiness always comes with inbuilt problems because it's a material substance. You are longing for happiness that's free of any conditions and complications and kickbacks. If you want that, then don't look for material happiness. It doesn't come in a package that's free of any problems. In fact, when you say material happiness, you also say problems. First of all, you have to work so hard for material happiness. Secondly, you have to endure and tolerate so many complications. You know how it is. Okay, I'll put up with this because I want to be happy. Even though it's tough right now, I want to be happy, so I'll tolerate it. Material happiness never comes alone. Just like one side of the coin never comes without the other side of the coin. If you want material happiness, that means you also want material distress. Let's hear how Srila Prabhupada explains that. In the material world, one cannot have unadulterated happiness. Oh, no. What do you think? You can't have it. You don't believe that, do you? You're going to show Krishna it's possible, right? Your life will be different, right? In the material world, one cannot have unadulterated happiness. Any kind of happiness one has is contaminated by distress also. This is revolutionary knowledge. For example, if we want to drink milk, then we have to bother to maintain a cow and keep her fit to supply milk. Drinking milk is very nice. It is also pleasure. But for the sake of drinking milk, one has to accept so much trouble. Yes, if you want to see what drinking milk is all about, then protect cows, and you'll see. It's very easy just to go to the shop and buy milk from slaughtered cows. And therefore you forget all the distress that the happiness of your drinking that milk has caused. You don't see all the slaughtered cows. You don't see their suffering. You don't see the calves that are taken away and slaughtered right after birth. You don't see those bobby calves. So because you're blind to all the distress, you think, oh, drinking milk is so nice. Cooking with milk is so nice. But when you protect cows, then you see the whole package. You see what's involved. The yoga system, as here stated by the Lord, is meant to end all material happiness and material distress. So you don't mind the yoga system ending the material distress, but it's going to end the material happiness? Are you ready for that? The best yoga, as taught in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, is bhakti yoga. It is also mentioned in the Gita that one should try to be tolerant and not be disturbed by material happiness or distress. Did you ever wonder, what does Krishna mean in Bhagavad Gita, saying so many times, the true yogi is not disturbed by material distress or material happiness? How can material happiness be a disturbance? It's like saying to these little boys here, you know, there's something better than playing. What? There's something better than playing? Do you know anything better than playing? Playing is so nice, right? Yes, right? Wouldn't it be great to play all your life? No? What do you want to do? You want to work and go to school? Oh, your parents are teaching you nicely. It's so hard for them to understand that there's something higher than playing. So if you say, there's a life in which no one plays, oh, I don't want to grow up. Similarly, saying to us, there's a life where there's no material happiness. There's beyond the material happiness. I don't know about that. I want to stay on the level I am now. Krishna, please. I'm praying to you, give me material happiness. More than that, I don't want. It's very unsure. More than that, give me what I know. So we're like little children. We can't conceive of something beyond material happiness. Just like these little kids cannot conceive that there's something better than playing all day. Of course, we're continuing to read the purport. Of course, one may say that he is not disturbed by material happiness, but he does not know that just after one enjoys so-called material happiness, material distress will follow. This is the law of the material world. You can't have one side of the coin without the other side. But we're determined to show it's possible, right? By my prowess, by my expertise at work and at home, I will show that I'll simply get material happiness and provide that for my family, and there'll be no complications. There'll be no kickback. There'll be no material distress. I will show because I'm expert. This is attitude is one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga, as stated by Shukadeva Goswami in 12th Canto Bhagavatam. Daksham Katumba Bharanam. In Kali Yuga, if a man can simply maintain a wife and two children, everyone says, oh, amazing, how nicely you're doing. You're really expert. You have a stable home and maintaining the home, and you have two children. Everyone's taken care of. This is glorious. This is the standard of Kali Yuga. What would be considered in other yugas to be so commonplace, it's not even worth talking about. In Kali Yuga, you're glorified like you're some kind of champion. Oh, how nicely you're doing. Oh, this is your house. This is your wife, your two children. You know, two cars. Oh, you are a Mahatma. Yes? And you feel so proud. Yes. And then you can fly back to the city or village of your birth in India, and yes, everything is wonderful in Australia. We are having everything. Everyone's looking at you. Oh, Mahatma. Oh. Can you help us get the PR also? We want to become Mahatmas too. Please bring us to the land of the Mahatmas. Well, what does Bhagavatam say? Duratma. The opposite. So we need some education. We need to understand there is something beyond material happiness. We need to understand the problems with material happiness. We shouldn't become threatened or feel insecure. Just like Devahuti, she's open. I want to hear. I understand material happiness and all of its built-in complications. I don't want that. I'm sick of it. You are my transcendental eye. You are the axe to cut down the tree of material existence. And so, Lord Kapila Deva is replying. He's saying, O most pious mother, I shall now explain to you the ancient yoga system which I explained formally to the great sages. It is serviceable and practical in every way. This is an important point for us to accept. It is serviceable and practical in every way. Yogam sarvanga naipunam. Because often we'll tell ourselves, I very much appreciate what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, but just right now it doesn't fit my circumstances. Yes, many of you might have said that at some point in your journey to Krishna's service. You might have said, just now is not the time. I have to be practical. There's so many other things I have to secure. And then later I can engage in Krishna's service. But here Lord Kapila Deva is telling you that Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is practical in every way. But you may not see that, so you need some help. You need guidance to see that. Just like Devahuti is asking for guidance. Let me see how to apply this process of bhakti. I know it will work, but I need help. My husband has gone from home. Carter Mamuni has gone to the forest. But he has given me such a wonderful son, inconceivable son. So I want to hear. And Lord Kapila Deva is responding, yes, the bhakti system is completely practical in every situation. Furthermore, he tells her, I'm going to tell you what I explained before. Krishna does the same thing in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, right? I'm going to tell you the same thing that I spoke to Vivaswan. Vivaswan spoke it to Manu. I'm going to speak that same thing. Notice how everything in the material world seems to change, but the transcendental message remains the same. What Krishna is giving to us, the knowledge Krishna is giving to us, is beyond the reach of time. That knowledge is not affected by past, present, or future. That's why it's called transcendental knowledge, knowledge above the actions and reactions of material nature. So this is Lord Kapiladeva's opening statement. I'm going to teach you what I've taught before. And know from the very beginning that everything I say is completely practical and applicable. Lord Kapiladeva was also smiling. The smile of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the sweetest. The whole Satchitananda, eternity, knowledge, and bliss body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is non-different from the self. Therefore, you can't say inside of Krishna or outside of Krishna. Everything about Krishna's body is sweet. But sweeter than Krishna's body is Krishna's face. But sweeter than Krishna's face is Krishna's smile. He's smiling at his mother. And you may remember in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna smiles. Arjuna says, "My dear Krishna, please take the chariot in between the two armies." Krishna does that. And then Krishna sees Arjuna becoming bewildered by Krishna's arrangement. Arjuna is becoming bewildered by Maya as he looks at all the opposing soldiers on both sides. Arjuna is thinking, how can I fight this war? These are Swajana, my own people, my own flesh and blood. He's overwhelmed by the body attachment, by Krishna's arrangement. Because Krishna wants to teach us what it's like to be in Maya. So he has Arjuna, his dear friend, demonstrate. Because Krishna is the controller of all potencies. So by his arrangement, even though Arjuna is his eternal associate, Krishna can arrange that Arjuna falls into Maya and demonstrates what it's like for our benefit. So then Krishna smiles. Why? Krishna is thinking, just see the power of my Maya. Arjuna is right here on the chariot with me. Still he's falling into Maya. Amazing. Krishna is amazed by his own potencies. Of course, it's by his arrangement that Arjuna is being bewildered for our benefit. Now, Kapiladeva is smiling upon hearing his mother's questions. He's thinking, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Lord Kapiladeva is thinking, wait a minute, you're my mother, how can you be in Maya? It's not possible. I don't appear from a mother who's in Maya. But why are you talking like you're in Maya? I know it's to benefit the common persons. So then Lord Kapiladeva goes on to explain the glories of the Bhakti Yoga system, which is genuine yoga. Sometimes people ask, how can within this imperfect world of illusion manifest pure knowledge? But because this world is simply an energy of the Supreme, by Krishna's arrangement, he can manipulate his potencies so that even within the material world, pure knowledge can appear. The pure transcendental knowledge is self-sufficient, just as Krishna is self-sufficient. Pure transcendental knowledge of bhakti is non-different from Krishna. If Krishna wants, he can make it possible that even within the material world, you can receive pure knowledge. If you say, no, it can't happen, that means you don't accept that there's a master of all potencies. It's the same as people saying, how can God come to the material world? You are here. If Krishna comes, that is his affair. But the difference is he is never illusioned by his own illusory energy, whereas we are bewildered by Krishna's illusory energy. In fact, for Krishna, all his energies are spiritual. The common example given, when the prime minister or the premier goes to visit a prison, just like recently in the USA, the president was concerned about the prison system. So he went to visit a prison. But does that mean his freedom was compromised? He walked in, he walked out. So even though for the prisoners it's prison, for the president it's just going to another place, like entering one room and then walking out of the room. No problem. Similarly, for Krishna, there's no maya. There's no illusion. But for the prisoners in the material world, yes, they're shackled. Krishna comes and goes without any compromise, any touch of pollution. Similarly, Krishna's knowledge that he delivers can appear in this world without any contamination by Krishna's arrangement, because Krishna is the master of all the potencies and he's the master of all the senses. By Krishna's arrangement, he can make your imperfect material senses capable of receiving transcendental knowledge. Often persons ask, well, how can we, with imperfect senses, grasp the absolute truth? It's not possible. But who is the master? Who is Hrishikesh? By Krishna's arrangement, the master of the senses can make it so that our senses can perceive what normally they can't perceive. This is why when we chant Hare Krishna, we're begging Krishna, please, let me engage in your service. Make my tongue rise beyond the material ignorance, avidya. Let my tongue be the gateway by chanting Hare Krishna. Let my tongue taste the nectar of service to Krishna, chanting your name simply, Krishna, for your pleasure. We're chanting and dancing for Krishna's pleasure. By chanting and dancing for Krishna's pleasure, that doesn't mean that you'll lose out on happiness. Think, oh, I like to dance for my happiness, for my pleasure. What if I dance for Krishna's pleasure? No, you become more joyful. Real joy is doing everything for Krishna's pleasure. So devotees dance jubilantly, always thinking, I'm doing this for glorifying Krishna, to please Krishna's senses. And because Krishna is the master of the senses, he can make it so that your imperfect, polluted tongue can actually taste the spiritual world. He can make it so that your imperfect senses can access the spiritual reality. And he can make it so that pure transcendental knowledge appears within the material world. And he's doing that right now with Devahuti. I'm going to teach you the same thing. It is our great fortune to be in contact with this timeless knowledge. But we're so bewildered by circumstances, aren't we? But there's this situation I have. There's that situation. This work situation. This school situation. This PR situation. This marriage situation. On and on and on it goes. But what Lord Kapiladeva is giving as Bhagavan is free from any material or circumstantial consideration. That's hard for us to accept because we're such creatures of circumstance, aren't we? And therefore we always say, Swami, we like what you say. And you're repeating what Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam says. But you know, In the real world, in the practical working world, right? So many times persons ask me questions like that. Yes, Swami, all glories to what Krishna says. And of course, we accept whatever Krishna says. After all, when I was a little boy, my grandmother read Mahabharata to me, so I know. But you see, the circumstances now are such that... But Lord Kapil Dev is saying, what I'm telling you is serviceable, it's doable, it's applicable and practical in every way. With guidance, we'll see that that is so. So rather than our hiding behind circumstances, oh, I have this financial complication, this visa complication, this income complication, family complication, rather than hiding behind the circumstances, we should push forward and get guidance how to deal with those situations, just as Devahuti is asking for guidance. That is the system for receiving transcendental knowledge and applying it. Lord Kapil Dev has already said that what he's going to teach will cause detachment, not only from material distress, but also detachment from material happiness. This is one of our great contributions to the world. We can present something far beyond material happiness. In a world where everyone will do anything to be happy, and whatever you do that seems to be for your happiness, you can justify, and people will accept now. Whatever you want, if you think it's going to bring you happiness, people will encourage you. Yes, just do it. That's the so-called freedom of the West that you perceive. But what is that so-called freedom to pursue happiness however you understand it? What has that done? People are becoming destroyed. They're going crazy with stress, alcohol abuse, drug abuse, family problems. All in the name of pursuing one's own type of happiness. I was speaking to one 12-year-old yesterday. She's the daughter of a devotee. Both her mother and father are devotees. So I noticed how she was thinking. So I said to her, I know what's going on. You're 12 years old and you're wondering how your life is going to be because you're caught between the material and spiritual worlds. She said, yes. You're 12 years old and you're thinking, what will be your life? Parents are devotees, but all around you is the material world. So you're going back and forth in your mind. You don't want to disobey your parents. At the same time, you're wondering, what's it like to be free? What's it like to just do whatever I want to do? So I said to her, okay, let's have an experiment. It was interesting having a conversation like this with a 12-year-old. Let's do an experiment. Say, right now, you can do whatever you like. Let's say, right now, your parents have told you, Western style, that whatever makes you happy, dear. That's the Maha Mantra for Western parenting. Your father and I will be so happy if you just do whatever makes you happy. That's what we want. We want you to follow your dream, and we'll support you. We'll support your quest for happiness, no matter what kind of happiness it is. That's the Siddhanta. So I said, okay. Suppose your parents tell you that. Okay, now what are you going to do? She thought. I don't know. I said, you can go to all-night parties. You want to do that? No. You can have 10 boyfriends. You want to do that? No. You can start getting intoxicated, drinking, like so many 12 and 13-year-old girls do. You want to do that? No. You want to go to Sizzlers and have steak? No. So what do you want to do? So gradually she could see that it was just this idea in her head of freedom. It's just this dream which has no basis in reality. So I said, you think that by becoming free from Krishna, your girlfriends at school will more accept you, and then you'll become more popular with the boys? No. It's all in the mind. And that's where Maya is. It's all in the mind. She can't see herself doing all these things. But just the fact that I'm being restricted. I said to her, I know, you feel like you're in prison, right? I said, yes. I said, don't you know every 12-year-old thinks like that? I thought like that when I was 12 also. My mother had strict rules, and all the other kids in the neighborhood would make fun of me. Oh, your mother's so strict. She's simply making you study and go to church, and you're not having any fun. So I felt so bad. I'm being deprived. So then I said to this 12-year-old daughter of devotees, I said to her, I also know another thing you're thinking, because I did it when I was 12. I prayed to God, oh God, why do I have to think about every situation through and through? Why can't I just go out and just be happy and just do anything and everything, just like everyone else? Why do I have to consider all the angles? What do the parents say? What does the Shastra say? What does Krishna say? That's what you're thinking. And she said, yes. It's like a curse. What is the greatest benefit and the highest birth to take birth in the family of devotees? When you're 12 years old, it seems like a curse. I just can't get out and just enjoy like the other kids. Because I always have to think, karma, next body, Maya. Why can't I just get into it? So I said, I know, I felt like that too. I actually remember praying to God, why did you give me intelligence? Why can't I just go out and party and just, you know, be a cat and dog freely like everyone else? But I can't. Why am I cursed in this way? So she said, yes, she's feeling like that. So I explained to her that this is a normal part of teenage life. But one has to climb to a higher level. So I told her how to do that. You like to read? Reading so many novels, reading so many books. Okay, a lot of it is schoolwork, but still, you like to read. That was one of the things she said she likes to do, just read a lot. I said, fine, I also read a lot when I was a kid. When I was 8 years old, I remember my mother would just buy me one set of encyclopedias after another. I just read encyclopedias from beginning to end. So every few months you'd have to find a new set of encyclopedias, you know. Back then there were no digital books, so you know, she had to bring home a huge set of encyclopedias. Okay, here's the latest set, read them. So I would just sit and start from the beginning and just read the whole encyclopedia to the end. Okay, ready for the next set. So I told this young lady, you like to read. Why don't you read Srimad Bhagavatam? So, oh, I never thought about that. I told her about one teenage girl who I noticed is in New Zealand. She was always reading so much, so many novels and so many fiction books. So when she was 13, I suddenly said to her one day, because I was staying where her family stayed, I said, why don't you read Srimad Bhagavatam? She said, oh, never thought about that. Okay. And she started. And by the time she was 16, she had finished Srimad Bhagavatam. Then when she was 17, she became initiated. And when she was 18 or 19, you know, she married the famous Krishnagraja. Well, great servant of Mahaprabhu Mandir. So, I explained there, it is possible to go to a higher level. So this disease of material happiness invades the mind, so much so that you start wondering. The Indian material happiness is deficient, but the Western material happiness, it seems so much better and freer. You can express yourself more, be individual more. It seems so intoxicating, doesn't it? You don't have to worry what the family thinks, right? What the grandmother in Gujarat is thinking. Just go for it. You just do it. It seems so exhilarating, right? So enlivening. Whatever your senses feel, you just do it at the moment with no consideration. Oh, it seems so pleasurable. So that's what our teenagers are surrounded with these days. Why are the teenagers? That's what our adults are surrounded with these days also. Why repress yourself? Go for the material happiness. What is the motto? One lifetime, one body, one opportunity. It's totally the opposite of Vedic civilization. The Vedic civilization glorifies the human form of life as the greatest opportunity, but at the same time, the Vedic knowledge will tell you there's life after life, body after body, but the human body is special. But the whole Western world is built on this illusion. One lifetime is all you've got. One body is all you get. One opportunity. What are you going to do right now to enjoy? And this degraded attitude causes the downfall of the entire human species. And therefore, there's so many economic, political, and environmental problems. So I could appreciate what was troubling this young lady. And I appreciated her honesty also, because she answered honestly. Yes, this is what's going on. Trapped between two worlds. Just like those of you who have been to our retreat weekends at Nandagram, organized by Nityananda Priya and his dedicated crew. Many students come, overseas students come for the first time, young professionals. And I explain, you're in a unique situation. You are a hybrid. What does it mean to be a hybrid? You have one foot in both worlds. You can't go completely into one world or the other. Got one foot in the India world, one foot in the Western world. And so it's like someone on a lake, and they have one foot in two boats. One foot in one boat, the other foot in another boat, and you're trying to balance. You can't go into one boat fully or the other boat. So I explain. We have such a retreat coming up next weekend. And I'll explain again that this is your dilemma. This is your fix. This is the situation you're caught in. You can't be completely traditional Indian, and you can't be completely Australian. So you're like wondering, where am I? What am I going to do? Hybrid. So we have to deal with those realities. And similarly, so many of your children will be growing up as hybrids, just like this 12-year-old was recognizing. She's a hybrid. She can't be completely traditional, and she can't be completely wild. So what to do? So we have to deal with that. But remember, Lord Kapilde's instructions are serviceable and practical in every way. But it's our responsibility to show that. We have to demonstrate that with our lifestyle. How Krishna's instructions suit all times and all places. That's what Arjuna said upon the disappearance of Krishna from the ordinary vision of this world. He was in such a crisis, but he said, I'm remembering the instructions of Govinda, which are good for all peoples in all times and all places. And the Bhagavatam explains that by Krishna's aiming his instructions at Arjuna, he is speaking to the whole world in all times and all situations. That's the bhakti yoga, Krishna conscious advantage. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Any questions? He says that this knowledge is ancient. Real Sankhya knowledge means to get to the root of material existence and water that root with bhakti. Real Sankhya doesn't mean simply to analyze material existence and leave it at that. No, if your analysis of material existence is correct, you get to the root of it. And not only do you see the root, but you apply devotion to the root. That's the Sankhya that Lord Kapil Dev is teaching. Otherwise, Lord Kapil Dev would not teach anything that's not bhakti. And he's telling you, I'm not saying anything new. I've said it before. If you study these chapters taught by Lord Kapil Dev, you will understand thoroughly how material existence operates and how the illusory energy works. It takes some concentration. But if you give it sufficient thought, you'll understand completely how Maya works and how to get to the root of all Krishna's energies and apply devotion to that root. Yes.
So you spoke about how Maya exists in the mind. Sometimes you have the opportunity for such service of, you become, sometimes I tend to become a bit lazy. So it's though I know that there is spiritual happiness there in the days.
Lazy? You don't mean that, do you? Brahmacharya cannot be lazy. You must mean another word. Reading? What's wrong with reading? Brahmacharya needs knowledge. Otherwise, how are you going to remain Brahmacharya? You need knowledge of how the material and spiritual energy operates. Otherwise, after a while, you'll think, what am I doing in this Brahmacharya ashram? But if you use your time in the Brahmacharya ashram for equipping yourself with transcendental knowledge, a taste for attentive chanting and selfless service, that's the greatest wealth. Then you're the richest man in the world. Without acquiring transcendental knowledge, how can one go on in the Brahmacharya ashram? It's too difficult. You can read the prayers by Sanatana Goswami at the end of his Krishna Lila Stava. There he says, Bhagavatam is my master, my friend, my companion. So the Brahmacharya has to feel the companionship with the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, you'll feel lonely. So yes, there must be sufficient transcendental knowledge. And reading the Bhagavatam doesn't mean you're lazy, but there's a time for doing everything. And as we become older devotees, we become more expert in how to use every moment for Krishna's pleasure. Of course, it is true. Reading Bhagavatam is not simply for the brahmacharis. And it's always very nice to know how in the Melbourne Mahaprabhu community there's opportunities for bhakti shastri and getting immersed in knowledge of Srila Prabhupada's books. the highest science. Somehow or other, every ashram has to make time for enlivening your consciousness with the knowledge of Bhagavad Dharma. Sannyasis also have to make time for that. We can come up with excuses too. So much traveling, this airport, that airport, on and on it goes. No time for reading. We could say that. So every ashram has its inconveniences that it has to deal with. But if you simply increase the luxury in your life of hearing and chanting about Krishna, you'll see that these obstacles can be overcome. Yes.
Coming also from the hybrid species, it's sometimes hard to perceive the problems of the Western lifestyle, for example, drinking or eating or being so called free. So could you please expand on problems that actually happen when you do these activities?
The problems that happen when you do these activities? I need to explain that. With your intelligence, why don't you study that? Study the social problems, the ecological problems, the political and economic problems. Don't just take the false presentation of Maya. Oh, they're so happy. Everything is nice. See with penetrating vision what's actually going on. Don't be bewildered by the first impressions given by Maya. Look more deeply into the subject through the eyes of the Bhagavatam and you'll see a disaster. Just like when I was speaking to this 12-year-old daughter of devotees, I said, I know another thing you're thinking. I said, you're tired of persons telling you that you're so fortunate your parents are devotees. She said, yes. Tired of hearing it. Tired of having that immense responsibility on the shoulders. Your parents, therefore you. Tired of it. I want to be me. So I said, well, you want to be me? Well, what is this me anyway? I don't know. So these are the realities. So we have to be aware that these conflicts, internal conflicts, affect both the children of devotees and affect the devotees too. This is the realities that we're dealing with, and let's deal with them by applying the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which are perfect for every time, place, and circumstance. All right, you have a question. Are you 12? How old?
10.
Okay, soon you'll be 12, right?
Before you said that the material existence is compared to a tree and Krishna is the axe.
Yes.
Who is the axe wielder?
Huh?
And who is the axe wielder?
He's saying that before I explained that material existence is like a tree and the knowledge of Krishna is the axe. But he wants to know who's holding the axe. The devotee holds the axe. The axe is given to you by parampara. Take this knowledge and cut the tree of material existence down. That is the real career of the human being. While we're studying, working, doing so many external responsibilities, let us not forget that we're meant to hold the axe and cut down the tree. And teaching your family how to do that is the greatest gift you can give. Yes.
Is it required for us to go through distress to be Krishna conscious?
This is a popular question that I get on our retreat weekends. Swami, please tell us. Isn't it so that in order to know what is happiness, you have to first experience distress? Very popular question. At least in that question, you recognize that happiness and distress are related. But there is real happiness beyond those dualities of material happiness and distress. Otherwise, I give this example. You'll probably, if you're there next weekend, you'll hear it. It's a nice sunny day in Melbourne. The weather is perfect and it's going to stay nice all day long without changing. And there you are walking along the beach out here. You're walking and you're feeling, oh, this is such a nice day, and breathing the sea fresh air, and everything is good. You know, my job is going okay. Everything is nice. And all of a sudden I come up to you and I have a lead pipe in my hand and I crack you over the head. And you collapse on the ground. And then 5 minutes later when you come to consciousness, I'm there looking in your face smiling. And you ask me, why did you do that? I said, I wanted you to be happier. Because unless you experience distress, you cannot appreciate the happiness of this day. So I was acting for your welfare. You needed some distress so you could appreciate the beautiful day even more. Would you accept that? No. So then why people say this? Oh, you need distress to appreciate happiness. No, real happiness exists in of itself, by itself. Real happiness is on the Transcell platform. Real happiness is in devotional service, in perfect relationship to Krishna. That's why Bhagavad Gita says, rise above material happiness and distress. Don't be caught in those dualities. Yes, this is another point I often hear. Krishna, if you would give me material happiness, I would be more enthusiastic to serve you, see? You know, it's a win-win situation. Something for you, something for me. We have such faith in the power of material happiness, don't we? That we know that material happiness will help us to serve Krishna better. Where's that verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that? There's no verse in Bhagavad Gita that says that. Service to Krishna and real happiness in bhakti is independent of material happiness. Material happiness offers a temporary, illusory feeling of fulfillment. But it always changes. You're always shortchanged. You go to the store, you buy something, you pay for it, you get your change back, you walk out of the store, and then look, I didn't get enough. I was cheated. That's the way it always is with material happiness. I mean, I don't have time, but I could explain to you at length. Even from the research from social science that shows material happiness is just a mirage. But even the social scientists who have come to that conclusion, they say they can't give it up. They don't know anything better. They've come up with a new term. Just like, you know, texting, the latest term about material happiness is called nexting. Always the next. What will the next be like? The next, the next. Because what you have at present, even if you call it happiness, it rapidly loses its flavor. It rapidly loses its newness and freshness. The technical term is adaptation. Whatever you get that's new and exciting, you soon become bored with it. It becomes the same old, same old. So therefore, next thing. What's the next? The next, the next. And this way you waste your whole human life on the hedonistic treadmill. Running, 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 but you never actually get anywhere. And that's the advanced civilization, the next thing civilization? No. That's hell. But we're so foolish, we think that what is hell is so heavenly. So we need knowledge. And therefore, we're very grateful to Lord Kapila Dev for explaining to his mother the ancient yoga system of bhakti. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.